This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello and welcome to The Bunker, your need to know on news and politics 5 days a week. I'm Dr. Kate Devlin. 2023 was the year of AI. Millions of people around the globe use tools like ChatGPT and Midjourney to generate text and images in seconds. And it saw the UK scramble to host the world's first international AI safety summit, a geopolitical move if ever there was one, at Bletchley Park. Just last month, the EU reached agreement on the first AI regulation in existence, and more nations will follow. So what's next? Well, I try never to do short-term forecasts about technology because they often come back to bite you. So joining me to make those predictions and take the blame for them is Kyle Taylor, author of The Little Black Book of Artificial Intelligence, How Big Tech is Making Humanity Redundant. Kyle, welcome to The Bunker.
Thank you so much. And, look, I'm very happy to be the one who's proved wrong.
Let's see. So your book talks about how we're now entering the AI age. And this is something that's really kicked off since November 2022, when ChatGPT, a large language model or an LLM, went public. And it had enormous engagement in a very short period of time and huge success. And the chances are, if you haven't already used an LLM, you probably will in 2024. So what is happening on that front? Where to next?
I mean, it is pretty extraordinary. And I think in the book, I liken it to the difference between before there was nuclear and after there was nuclear. And I think that this step change is as significant as that one. I think you're right. I mean, the world changed November 2022. And I think for this year, what we're going to see first and foremost is that everyone will be engaging with an LLM, with a large language model like ChatGPT in some way, shape, or form. And the primary reason is because what it can do for businesses is allow them to reduce labor costs. I mean, it's as simple as that, right? Everything in the AI space, and this is so, so important, is being designed under a for-profit lens to maximize profit, make as much money as possible. And there are huge human implications on that front that I think we're going to start finally feeling this year.
So in terms of productivity, this is something we could see beginning to be integrated into very standard software we use every day. Is that the case?
Yeah, I think so. People will be familiar with like a chat bot in your banking app that doesn't know what you actually want and is pretty much fairly useless, right? I think what we'll see this year is that they may actually become a little more useful and a little, I hate to use the word smarter, a little more capable. Perhaps is the way to phrase it. But what we're going to see alongside that is a total failure of governments to do anything to protect people through this process.
Well, we'll get onto that in a little bit. But is there any chance that LLMs are going to peak this year, or you know, might they reach some kind of limit? Could we even see a decline?
I personally think that their progress is at present limitless. The only thing really holding back progress is server space and server power to actually process the scale. And I'll give you an example in terms of how far we've come. From November 2022 to March 2023, when ChatGPT went from 3.5 to 4, it got 100,000 times more capable in 6 months.
Wow.
And 3.5 was still learning at a rate 10,000 times faster than humans. And so if you think that's the step change, and step changes is exponential. So every 6 months to 12 months, you expect it to get twice as good, at least. And what we're seeing is factors of in the thousands. And so I think by the end of 2024, we'll be looking at something that is easily the most capable thing that we can think of, and probably doing stuff that we didn't imagine at this moment it would be able to do. And as an example, very recently, I'm sure with the whole Sam Altman OpenAI thing that happened, he was removed, he was back and so forth. That was primarily around the fact that apparently the ChatGPT was starting to do math, which is very different than predicting language. And that's the big step change.
So we did cover the whole Sam Altman hokey cokey in a previous episode. I'm going to stake my reputation on there not being any artificial general intelligence in 2024. And I really hope I haven't jinxed all of humanity with that statement.
I would
but
agree.
Let's just say, good, excellent. Right. So we're agreed that we're not seeing any existential threat in 2024. If that goes wrong, if my prediction is wrong, then it's not going to matter because we'll be wiped off the face of the planet. So there we go. It's a safe prediction.
I think that I agree with you in the sense of a primary existential threat. I don't think the AI is going to come to kill us next year. But there are some serious secondary threats. So one, of course, we're talking about work. But two, there are elections in more than 50 countries. Half the world is going to the polls. And because of AI, you have no idea whether anything you see online is real or not. That's the reality of the situation, right?
This is huge, isn't it? I mean, this is over 4 billion people are going to be voting in decisive elections. And as you said in your book, audio generating AI tools can be trained on like 30 seconds of recording, and that gives you a passable clip that imitates someone. What's going to happen if this hits electioneering process?
Well, and you think there's 30 seconds of audio of normal lay people, probably for most of us, right? But you think about politicians, there are hundreds, thousands of hours of audio and video that can all be used to shape a message. And of course, there's elections in the US and Donald Trump is intending to be back on the ballot. I don't think people necessarily remember how close the 2020 election was. So Biden actually only won by 45,000 votes in the context of the way the Electoral College system works, even though he got 7 million more votes because it's sort of like not really democracy. So that was razor's edge margins 4 years ago. So what happens when there's a clip that somebody makes of Joe Biden burning a Bible that goes viral in Midwestern states, right? And because social media platforms are disbanding their election integrity teams, which weren't very effective anyway, we're going to see no controls on this stuff. And it takes 6 to 8 hours for something to be irreversibly damaging in the social media space. And you can't undo what this capability will do.
I mean, this is really frightening stuff. And it's not even just deepfakes on its own or misinformation or disinformation, but you could just have someone pretending to be a figure of authority, but it's actually just AI generated, phoning someone up and saying, "No, don't go to the polling station. Your polling station is closed or moved, or we've shifted the election date." So it doesn't even have to be this threat of deepfakes. It could just be actual manipulation of the voting populace.
Oh, absolutely. And you think about the sort of age of the emergence of disinformation and the age of the idea of micro-targeting, right? Where people would design, let's say, 1,000 versions of an ad to send to different people on social media, 1,000. With AI, you could almost instantly create 10,000 versions, 100,000 versions, right? So not only is there more information flooding the system, but it's more specific to each person. And what ultimately what that does is it breaks down any sense of shared reality, right? Everyone's walking into a room with their reality that's been shaped for them using AI tools online.
Okay, this is really scary stuff.
If you don't have reality, how does the society
yes,
function?
Yes, absolutely. And we think, well, surely there must be some kind of regulation in place to counter this. But unfortunately, not yet. So as I mentioned in the intro, AI regulation is getting some attention. The EU is leading the way. They're ready for the step to actually put this into practice. But the nations who are big players are taking quite different approaches. And where is this going to go in 2024?
Yeah, so, I mean, it is true that the EU is leading the way. In the current negotiations, it's been really disappointing because some of the largest countries are actually trying to gut the measures that have to do with what's called frontier AI, which is that artificial general intelligence type stuff, because everyone's worried about curbing innovation and investment. So that's the EU, still the best, but not great. Then you look at the AI Safety Summit in the UK. And I mean, the fine print of all of that summit was, one, everything's voluntary for the companies. And, you know, we've seen that these tech companies are so great with voluntary measures in the past, right? I mean, holy cow, how are we even considering that any type of regulation? And two, China was excluded.
Yeah.
There's 1.5 billion people in China, and they're the second largest AI innovator in the world. So if they're not part of it, what's the point? And then the third place you're seeing it is in the US, again, with the White House sort of coming out with this grand look at what we're doing with AI and look what we got the companies to agree to. Again, all voluntary, all of it. And the irony here of having competition in the space is actually that it's making it worse because companies don't want to share new stuff for fear that another company might pick up on it. So competition plus uninspired government action is going to leave us in a place where we'll see very quickly that none of this regulation is actually regulation.
And also probably moving quite slowly because there are other things on the government's minds, like elections coming up. So both the UK and the US are going to be distracted for a bit.
Well, and I think a great way to look at it is with social media, we saw the Cambridge Analytica scandal emerge in 2018, where we learned that people's data was taken without their consent, so forth and so on. It took 5 years for even the first bit of legislation in the EU to come into effect. The Online Safety Act is still not in effect in the UK. There is zero regulation in the United States. I mean, AI is categorically more impactful than social media, and it's moving so much faster. You know, we're nowhere. And the companies know that. And I think it's really important to remember that these companies know how to work governments.
And that's why we saw so many tech leaders coming into that AI safety summit, because they are the ones with the countries taking a pro-innovation approach, which basically means let's keep the tech bros happy. We've got to work with them because we want to make sure we're maximizing profit as well.
Absolutely.
So we have this perfect storm of, well, I'm sure they'll do it. No, I'm sure they'll do it. No, you know, surely it'll all just happen. It won't just happen. So
absolutely not.
Let's see how things go. Okay, surely we can have something good that's going to happen with AI this year.
Yes.
So any thoughts what that might be?
Yeah, so I categorize AI in four categories. Simple AI, like which is now like algorithms, autocomplete on emails. Smart AI, which is the ChatGPT stuff. Sentient, which is what we talked about around artificial general intelligence. We don't have to worry about that just yet. And then the last category, siloed AI. And this is where I think we're going to see a lot of positives in 2024. So siloed AI is where you have a very clear input and a very clear output. So for example, here AI analyzed these 100,000 radiography scans of cervical cancer screenings and tell us what's consistent about them. Right. And I think in medicine in particular, we're going to see huge developments in siloed AI around being able to identify things much earlier. And the second place in medicine, which is honestly where I think we have the best hope with AI in terms of a humanity perspective at the moment, is around the ability for AI to help us test drugs faster. If there's another pandemic around the corner or a breakout of a certain disease, then I think, again, there, we could reap the benefits.
And we've already seen some of that happen with things like the AlphaGo protein folding, where it was able to synthesize data very quickly and come up with completely new things. Mm. So, yeah, that's pretty hopeful.
Well, and I think I have to say, like, I am not anti-AI. It's at all. I'm anti the model that we're using, for-profit companies primarily focusing on profit only, to develop it, right? This AI could be the thing that allows us to work 10, 15 hours a week and not force people to do really hard jobs that are very damaging to their bodies. It could be the thing that helps us with reducing carbon emissions, environmental approaches, medicine, all of that. If we were saying, okay, this is a tool that the number one thing we want to do is improve people's lives. But that's just not what we're doing.
So there is this double-edged sword. We can see productivity benefits, but we can also see the harms. And I'm like you, I'm kind of optimistic about this, but I'm a very cautious optimist. And I agree with you. I don't think it's really the way it's set to play out. It's not looking great.
No.
Thinking about other aspects where it affects our lives. So in Hollywood, the Writers Guild of America went on strike from May to September in 2023 to get new contracts set up, to put guardrails in place around the use of AI technology. And that's something I think we're going to see more of, to try and make sure that AI keeps in step with the workers, that it's not replacing them. So do you think there's going to be more of that in store?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that we're finally going to start to be able to measurably see the impact of AI in the space of work. it's quite upsetting, right? I saw a really funny tweet that was like, the future utopia I wanted wasn't humans doing hard labor while AI wrote TV scripts and music. And I think that, you know, and it's these middle band jobs, sort of 60 to 90,000 pound a year, white collar thinking jobs that AI is the most likely to affect quickly. We saw with S4 Capital, one of the biggest advertising and media agencies in the world, that they had laid off, I believe it was nearly half of their staff, replaced entirely with AI. So junior level creative stuff, very easy for AI to do it. And that's the same with script writing in Hollywood, which is why people wanted that. There was also a UK court decision in December of 2023 that was specifically about that AI cannot hold a patent, which I think is also going to be really important as we move forward, because the question then becomes, who holds the patent, right? The person who manipulated the AI to make something, society in some sort of new form of ownership, since it's our collective knowledge that's training AI, a company. You know, there's so many questions around intellectual property that I think we'll start to have to get into the weeds of in 2024. But if you think about anything else that's impacted society at this scale, is there anything you can think of that happens so quickly?
Exactly. So we've been automating human jobs since we picked up sticks and used flints to cut things. But it's this speed, it's this scale, it's this completely transformative way that it's doing it right now. And as you say, there's so much tied up in attribution as well. So it's taking the essence of us and giving it back to us in a different package, really. And of course, you know, in the past, when we've had this kind of thing happen, when we've seen things like the Industrial Revolution, or, you know, I think we're Industrial Revolution number 4 now, I believe, you know, in the past, we've bounced back from those within a generation. But now, of course, this scale is just tremendously huge.
Yeah, and in the past as well, while those at the very top have always done much, much better, everyone's lives have improved. So, but now what we're seeing with AI is it's going to be the reverse, right? So the middle and lower bands in the first wave, their lives are going to get categorically worse because of layoffs, widespread layoffs. And, you know, people keep saying, oh, this is such an alarmist view and stuff. But you can find very, very conservative think tanks and outlets that are saying 40 to 60% of jobs will be affected. This is a very mainstream view because the business incentive is so clear. And that's why I worry, because we can absorb an industrial revolution over the course of 50 years where we're seeing movement within an economy and so forth. But we cannot absorb an industrial revolution in the course of 18 months where the same worker displacement occurs. And that's what I feel like we are walking into. And ironically, not blind, but just sort of governments not caring.
It does seem like that. And of course, in the past, they were coming for all the low paid workers. They were coming for the blue collar jobs. Now it's the middle management that is being threatened. Now it is the white collar jobs that can be replaced easily. And so, of course, there's even more panic.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I've done a few talks in different contexts. And whenever I do a talk in a sort of either creative industry or finance sector environment, there's someone who's like, well, it would never be able to take my job because, you know, and you're sort of going, you're the job they're targeting because you're the creative director. You're the, you know, finance executive. You're expensive. You know, if they can find a way to replace you, they will replace you.
Yeah, right now there are jobs out there that are not immediately under threat. And I'm thinking of things like care work, where it's a very physical aspect, which, you know, we just simply will not have robots doing those jobs anytime soon. So there are still going to be numerous jobs out there, but not enough that will compensate for the jobs that are being lost by any stretch of the imagination. And also, it tends to be the very undervalued work that people don't really want to take on unless they have to.
Yeah, and we need to reframe how we think about this in the context of economies, right? So not that if you don't work, you don't have money to live, but how do we use technology to ensure people have enough to live, right? And it's just a spin. And, you know, people talk about universal basic income, these other interventions. But why is it that we're not saying, how can we use technology so that people can have nicer lives? And instead, we're saying, oh, won't it be cool? The world will have its first trillionaire.
Yeah. I mean, I heard this recently. I heard there were people saying things like, soon everyone will be able to have these godlike powers. I'm thinking, I don't want godlike powers. I just want to live a nice life that everybody's got enough food and enough shelter. I
mean, exactly.
We don't need to aim for the really bizarre godlike goals.
No.
Never one to avoid controversy, Elon Musk has released his own large language model. But I think one of the key questions for this year is, when is Elon going to feck off? And I could be bleeped, but I assure you as an Irish person that feck is not a dirty word. So maybe we can extend that to all of the tech bros, because I do think they're part of the problem here. Are we getting tired of them? Because I know I am. Or are we stuck with this very ego-driven development for yet another year?
We are stuck.
Oh, no.
I know. What's happened is, because of the celebrification of everything and social media and all the rest of it, it's easier for consumption and media to just frame it through the lens of this one person. So they're not going anywhere, especially as people are losing trust in governments and looking for alternative forms of leadership. You know, I agree with you. When is Elon Musk going to feck off? But he's too much money, power, and influence.
I mean, to the point where he was able to sit down in conversation with the UK's prime minister in what looked like Rishi Sunak's next job interview, essentially. But to have that level of influence just seems phenomenally strange. Or to have these groups of tech bros who are coming in and saying, okay, we want a moratorium on the AI that we ourselves have created, which, you know, sneakily sounds like them trying to get a competitive advantage.
Regulatory capture, yeah.
Yeah, so it seems like, yeah, like you're saying, we're probably stuck with them. And I'm kind of hoping that there will at some point be a bit more accountability for them.
Yeah, I mean, the key is accountability. It's just this idea that governments seem to have forgotten who they're meant to represent and who they're meant to work for. And, you know, the global financial crisis didn't change anything. The first wave of tech annihilation and pandemic didn't change anything. We're still in the situation where governments see their primary objective as encouraging and supporting business and private enterprise. And I mean, the last thing I'd say about Elon Musk is he's a sociopathic, narcissistic egomaniac. But unfortunately, a lot of people seem to like that. I mean, look at Trump's popularity, Boris Johnson's popularity, right? It's just this idea of these sort of misunderstood, just let them get on with it, strapping men.
Yeah, and I'm not sure I would let any of them control my oxygen supply on Mars, to be perfectly honest. Slightly worrying. Let's wrap it up there. But if you want to learn more about all of this, why not buy Kyle's new book, The Little Black Book of Artificial Intelligence, How Big Tech is Making Humanity Redundant, through our affiliate bookshop. Doing this will help fund The Bunker by earning us a small commission for every sale, and bookshop.org's fees help support independent bookshops too. Kyle, thank you so much for joining me in The Bunker.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, please support The Bunker on Patreon. For as little as £3 a month, you can get extras, in addition to that warm, glowing feeling you get from knowing you're supporting handmade, independent media. I'm Dr. Kate Devlin. Thanks for listening.
The Bunker is presented by Dr. Kate Devlin and produced by Chris Jones and Adam Wright. Audio production was from me, Robin Leeburn. Group editor is Andrew Harrison. Managing editor is Jacob Jarvis. Art by Jim Parrott and music by Kenny Dickinson. The Bunker is a Podmasters production.